They were afraid to take on the football program. It was like going against the president of the United States. If that's the culture on the bottom, God help the culture at the top.
Former FBI Director Louis Free yesterday discussing his report on the Penn State football program sexual abuse scandal. We begin today by asking, was Penn State simply a bad apple? You know, some of the commentary since the Free report was released went something like this. Major college sports programs all over the country are too unaccountable to their universities, and the coaches so powerful, no one would dare report abuse. Jonathan Mahler, a New York Times Magazine contributor, is author of books including Death Comes to Happy Valley, all about the Penn State scandal, and Coach Joe Paterno, the fallen idol in this tragic story. Hi, Jonathan. Thanks so much for coming on today.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me.
First, let me get your take on the headline phrase that the Free report has produced, that the top university officials, including the president and Coach Paterno, showed a, quote, total and consistent disregard, unquote, for the welfare of children because they knew about and covered up the investigations into assistant coach Jerry Sandusky. Did the Free report reveal here things that are new to you, even having written your book? Is the whole thing even worse than you thought 24 hours ago?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I think that there was a suspicion and almost really an assumption that, particularly in the case of Joe Paterno, that, you know, he had to have known, even though he denied, and in fact he denied under oath, that he knew anything about Sandusky's actions in 1998. I think everyone felt that it was just impossible to believe that Joe Paterno, who held so much power, who really ran not just the football program at Penn State, but in many ways ran the university, and that the football program itself was you know, such a sort of integral part of the university. I mean, even more than that, I think that everyone kind of believed he had to have known, and now we have overwhelming conclusive proof. I mean, and it's just so. The report itself is so exhaustive and so damning, and I'm sure that it's going to basically become a kind of roadmap for all sorts of litigation that's going to follow.
And listeners, to whatever extent you are interested, you can read this report with a link on our site. It's 200-plus pages, but we've linked to the whole thing. You can go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show if you want to read the Free report, or if you want to comment on our comments page about this topic, WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. And here's about the...
Can I add one quick thing, Jonathan? Go ahead. I think also, I talked a lot about Joe Paterno, but the other person whom I think hasn't gotten enough attention in all this is Graham Spanier, the former president of Penn State, who, you know, has really thus far gotten off the hook. I mean, he was forced out. He left, but there are no criminal charges pending against him. I'm sure he is still receiving his all of his benefits, his pension, et cetera. And, you know, as someone who also knew exactly what was going on with Jerry Sandusky, he should face some sort of consequences as well. So
here's about 30 seconds of Louis Free from the news conference talking about the culture of power and fear up and down the chain that contributed to Jerry Sandusky not being stopped.
The janitors, that's the tone on the bottom. They witness what I think in the report is probably the most horrific rape that's described. And what do? They panic. The janitor who observes it said it's the worst thing he ever saw. He's a Korean War veteran. He said, I've never seen anything like that. It makes me sick. He spoke to the other janitors. They were alarmed and shocked by it. But what did they do? They said, we can't report this because we'll get fired.
They can't report this because they'll get fired. That's powerful, chilling language, Jonathan. And I wonder what it tells you about Penn State, or maybe beyond Penn State, about the nature of power.
Yeah, I think that people, I mean, certainly at Penn State, and I think that this is the case. I mean, certainly, let's hope we don't have scandals like this at other major universities. I mean, we've certainly had them at one other major institution, the Catholic Church. But I think that these football programs have become so powerful at these big Division I schools that everyone lives in fear of them. Everyone knows that to go against the football program, and often it's the coach himself who has been sort of deified, perhaps nowhere quite as much so as Paterno at Penn State, but it happens at all the Division I colleges, and football has become so important there that I think everyone has completely lost their perspective, and there is this culture of fear. And you know, it's one thing for these janitors to be afraid of losing their jobs, which you know is in some sense, you know, I guess you can sort of understand that. But then you have these men of authority, these people who are administrators, whose job it is to make these decisions, sweeping it under the rug, and that's that much worse.
And they also covered it up largely out of fear,
exactly.
According to the report, fear of publicity and what that would do to recruitment and university fundraising. So I guess they never considered how worse it is for people who cover up institutional problems rather than report and deal with them and move on. But now they're learning that lesson.
Yeah, they are. And I think that hopefully that there will be some serious repercussions and some serious changes made. I mean, certainly at Penn State, but you know, you have to hope against hope, really, that universities that all the other sort of major Division I colleges that put so much into their football departments, their football programs, will now kind of take a step back and think about, you know, what have we created here, and is it really advancing the mission of the university, or is it really ultimately kind of undermining it?
Listeners, any thoughts or questions about the larger lessons of the Penn State scandal for universities with big college sports programs in general? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. For Jonathan Mahler, New York Times Magazine contributor and author of the book, it's one of those what they call Kindle singles. It's an ebook, Death Comes to Happy Valley, all about Joe Paterno and this scandal. 212-433-9692. Does the report, to your eye, go beyond Penn State, either implicitly or explicitly?
Implicitly, I think it certainly does, and I think that this is, unfortunately, the body, the institution that's kind of charged with overseeing all this, the NCAA, has some of its own problems, and isn't exactly a great voice of moral authority, given that it essentially is. You know, exploiting many of these college athletes itself, but I think that there's no question that you know, the situation at Penn State was extreme, but nevertheless really kind of emblematic of how the sort of the rise of college football culture and the importance of football programs at universities. And you know, a lot of that really happened, if you want to kind of look at the history, in the 1980s when college football games began to be televised. It used to be, you know, you'd watch one, two games on TV on Saturday. Now you have college football on all day on Saturday. You have stadiums. I mean, the Penn State Stadium seats, the Beaver Stadium seats more than 100,000 people.
Incredible.
I mean, this is a tiny town, 5 square miles.
And just so people have some sense of perspective on that, if they're not familiar with stadiums very much, that's twice the seating of Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, exactly. And you have a town like State College, which is really a tiny town, 5 square miles.
Yeah.
But on football Saturdays, every other Saturday in the fall, it's the third largest city in Pennsylvania. I mean, it's the masses just descend on it. And you know, I really, it's very powerful. As you drive into State College, it's really the first thing you see is this huge sort of battleship gray stadium. I mean, it's just enormous on this otherwise really pastoral landscape, and it's a stadium that's you know, been expanded over and over and over again to kind of meet the needs of this growing program, this kind of growing monster, really. And to me, it's sort of is a kind of a powerful metaphor for how football came to kind of take over this university and this town.
And I think, if anything, there's even going to be more national focus on big school college football, or at least college power football powerhouse college football, with this new bowl playoff system that they're instituting. So now there's going to be a real national champion and a focus on this, like it's the postseason in a professional sport instead of
it's the last thing. It's the last thing we need. Is exactly. It's the sort of just kind of. Really removing these football programs even further from the universities themselves. I mean, and really fundamentally, that's I think the problem is that these programs operate completely independently. And I mean, you look at a school like Penn State, and it's especially ironic there because Paterno, when he was a younger coach, would and even really in the prime of his career, would talk about how he wants to make sure his players are not separated from the rest of the student body, that they were going to live in the same dorms, and he wanted them to be studying Shakespeare as well as learning how to tackle, and yet like so many other schools, Penn State spent millions upon millions of dollars on a special sports complex, training complex, the Lash Building, where in fact Sandusky's crimes took place, that was off limits to not just to other Penn State students, but to the student body. And they built these apartments, the Nittany Apartments, right next to Beaver Stadium, that was populated almost exclusively by football players. So. You have just a culture that exists independent of a university, and then you have in a coach like Joe Paterno, a man who has so much power, who controls. I mean, if you think about essentially these universities being built on alumni contributions, alumni donations. It's so much of that revolves around the football team, and so much revolves around this one man. And I just would one quick story that at one point Paterno, there was a new dean at Penn State in the early 2000s who really tried to take Paterno on, and who felt that the football players were being given special treatment. They were getting into trouble but not getting punished, and she wanted to change that culture. And Paterno threatened to stop fundraising for the school if her advice was taken. So, wow. And that gives you a sense of just how powerful he was.
Robin Piscataway, you're on WNYC. Hi, Rob.
My question to the guest is, even if appropriate restrictions like that are put in place at a lot of these Division I schools, something like a football program would still be absolutely massive and carry lots of power. How do you see changes in any kind of administration being made to rein that in?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a good question. I mean, I think that first of all, I mean, these programs need to be under the control of the university. I mean, they are, there needs to be, and this we can again look at Penn State as an example of this. At one point in time in the early 80s, I believe, when Paterno first really started to become such a powerful force, he was made athletic director of the school. Of the university, and the football program was kind of deliberately sort of separated. Athletics were sort of separated from the university, and I think that it needs to be, football programs need to be accountable to and all sports programs really at these universities need to be accountable to the academic side of the institution. There needs to be an academic dean overseeing these programs. They need to be part of the culture of the university.
Though, so that was one of Paterno's great successes prior to this scandal being revealed and his role in it, right, was that he kept his players on an academic track more than a lot of other coaches did?
He certainly claimed to have, yeah. And I think, at one point in time, in the earlier days, he did. So you get into the 21st century, and you see that Penn State his players are getting into all sorts of disciplinary trouble, and, have the many of them had criminal records, and you see that the grand experiment, as Paterno called it, really had fallen apart by then. But because he was such a mythic figure, people didn't really look too closely at what was going on there. So that's partly why some of this came as such a shock. But in answer to the question, I think that it's the impossible task because these programs are now so powerful. But really, that's what has to happen. They need to be brought under the umbrella of the university. They need to be brought back in. And that is just, I think, you know, it has to happen, and I think it's going to be virtually impossible to happen because these universities are, because these programs are so very powerful, functioning right. independently and unaccountably.
Marie in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Marie.
Hi.
You have a story.
Hello. Yes, my story is that I went to Stanford in the early 80s, and the football players were treated with allowed to act with impunity in a way that other people weren't. And my experience was that I had gone to study in the library late at night, and apparently some of the football players who lived in my dorm had been very upset that I was dating somebody outside of the dorm, and they felt like the women in our dorm were supposed to only sleep with them.
Nice.
So they got very, very drunk. They broke into my room, and they were waiting for me at like 2 in the morning. And when I came back to my dorm room, luckily I wasn't by myself, I called the police. And before the police got there, all these other students came out and said, you can't press charges, you can't have the police take them, because everybody's going to hate you. And I felt completely intimidated by that, and I didn't press charges.
Because were members of the team.
Because they were on the football team.
Right, and if they were punished, it would hurt the team.
And so there's the culture of fear, the power that creates the fear expressing itself. Marie, that is a chilling story. Thank you for sharing it. It is totally relevant. Philip in Jersey City, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, yeah. I just wanted to make a comment that even for someone like me who is not interested in football very much at all, I even know the names of universities like Notre Dame and how they're famous for their football teams and things like that. And I just think that sort of sports culture is so ingrained in the system that now that this has come to light, it would just, if something like that were going on in a place like Notre Dame, then they would just want to press even harder to hide it more, I think is my opinion.
So Philip is saying, Jonathan, I think that it's going to make other colleges even more, better at hiding things. I guess, you tossed off earlier the thought that, well, hopefully there aren't a lot of colleges out there doing this, like there were a lot of instances in the Catholic Church. Should we think that there might be other coaching staff sexual abuse scandals that will now be revealed at other universities, like the cascade of charges against priests, because that seal of secrecy has begun to be lifted?
Yeah. I mean, I would hope that the scale and magnitude of what went on at Penn State is unique and is unprecedented among universities and college football programs. I mean, we can only hope that's the case. Having said that, I think there's no doubt that we are going to see more scandals. I won't even say like this, but more scandals that have been treated like this, that have been covered up in similar fashion, and for precisely the same reasons. I mean, if you think what we're seeing happen to Penn State and what's going to happen to Penn State, I mean, who's going to want to go to Penn State to study, let alone to play football at this point? I mean, this is truly going to destroy the university, at least for the foreseeable future. And I am sure that plenty of other universities are going to be are going to live in fear of the very same thing happening to them. And whether that's going to make them more inclined or less inclined to be transparent, I guess it depends on the individuals in charge.
It's an interesting question. What happens to Penn State next? Does it become like maybe other parallel examples are Kent State or Virginia Tech, where parents have pause about sending their kids because of the legacy of one incident?
Yeah.
But you know what else I'm curious about? Last thing, your latest book is The Challenge, mm-hmm. Hamdan versus Rumsfeld and the Fight Over Presidential Power, about executive power in the Bush administration and the war on terror. That is a pretty different topic. But is there some notion of power or power in the military and the pseudo-military world of sports that ties your two interests together?
Absolutely. I mean, there is in my book, The Challenge is all about a Navy officer, a JAG lawyer, and a law professor at Georgetown who are assigned to defend bin Laden's driver on Guantanamo Bay, and they end up taking his case to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court rules in their favor and acts really as a check against presidential power. And so the lesson being that the president, even during wartime, has to be accountable to the other branches of government. There has to be accountability. And I think what we saw at Penn State, what we're learning that happened at Penn State is that there was absolutely no accountability. That there was this program that was surrounded by this ring of powerful individuals, the most powerful, of course, being Joe Paterno, who were going to protect that program at all costs, at the expense of vulnerable young children, and that there was no system in place to stop them. They were all powerful as Louis Free said it would have been like going against the president of the United States. Well, fortunately, in our government we have a system of checks and balances. We have a way to check the president, the power of the president. But at Penn State, that no such thing existed,
right.
And so they were able to unilaterally decide how this scandal would be handled, and that's in fact what they did for years.
Well, we'll see if the fact that this report was commissioned by the trustees of the university
and over the advice of the general counsel, who felt that once this got rolling, it would never end. And I think that is indeed going to be the case.
We'll see what happens next. We thank Jonathan Mueller, New York Times Magazine contributor, author of books including The Challenge about executive power and the Bush administration, and Death Comes to Happy Valley about the Penn State scandal. Jonathan, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC coming up next. In response to Mitt Romney keeping some of his wealth in other countries, the editor of Reason magazine asks, what's so bad about Swiss bank accounts? Stay with us.